Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. My name is Peter Mingles. We do a radio show with a gentleman whose name is always Scott Johnson on Saturday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central Time. And for those people that are wondering if I sound normal, meaning like I usually do, it's because AT&T was finally able to fix my landline. So for those people that are unfamiliar, a landline is what people used to have before they had cell phones and mobile lines. Landlines are more reliable. They have copper wires. They have electricity that runs through them. They are old, probably, very old, as a result, because they were the first ones lined in there. And as AT&T is trying to figure out how to move people to fiber and or internet, I know that almost all phone lines, actually all phone lines eventually go through the internet, but the ones that are going through the copper wires hooked up to the fiber or VoIP is starting to become problems for companies big like AT&T. So I like this one because it gives me an opportunity to type, and you guys don't hear. For those people that think that having a microphone that sounds crystal solid clear is an important thing, as misguided as you might be, if we were doing recordings like your music, you'd probably want the crispest thing for those people that like music. But for people like me, who always have a lot of background noises and other stuff like that, because I'm running a business and we have other things going on as well, and many times because I'm running servers, which is something that most network marketing anti-MLM critics have no clue on, and because we're dealing with actually running a business, which they actually don't have any clue on as well, because we actually have our own infrastructure and all those other types of things, there's lots of times where I might have to be multitasking, believe it or not, and doing different and various things. So an analog microphone is less sensitive than a digital microphone, for those people that might know it. And those AT&T landlines are more analog than they are digital. So although we could do this through the internet because we have lots of speed going through our servers, I choose to do the telephone portion of our radio show through a regular landline. Number one, also two, is because we're in Florida. And in Florida, we have things like hurricanes and old people that run into telephone poles or do things where things break, so we need to make sure that we always had landlines. And for anybody who's ever had a natural disaster, cell phones always, they bog down first, so the landlines still have electricity running through it, so we're going to be okay there no matter what. So for safety reasons, as well as every other reason, I really do like AT&T and a landline. But what was happening is they were having a super-duper hard time getting the landlines working. There was static on my outbound call. It took about 5 or 6 weeks. You heard it here on Building Fortunes Radio as well. So us to be able to get that stuff done. But through hard work, persistence, rattling some cages, finding a couple of people that really cared, we finally got to figure it out. So having said that, that's a little bit of an intro of why I might sound, I'm going to say, normal. So back to this. On Saturday nights, we do a radio show with a great gentleman. His name is Scott Johnson. The way that started was real simple. I did a radio show for an anti-MLM person whose name is still Roger Van Vlissingen. Roger Van Vlissingen wrote or still writes for a website called SeekingAlpha.com. Seeking Alpha deals with publicly traded companies. Roger is an anti-MLM critic, and he's super-duper smart. So when he writes stuff, he makes sense, unlike some of the other anti-MLM people that say things that don't make any sense at all, which is really sad. Anyway, so Roger was doing some stuff. I'm an initiative kind of a person, so I picked up the phone and called Roger. I asked him if he would want to be on a radio show. He brought a friend of his whose name is still E. Robert Smith, who wrote I don't know, remember the name of the book. I think it was called Downline. But anyway, they were both on. It was a really good radio show. You'll find it if you go to Building Fortunes Radio and you look for Roger Van Vlissingen. But after that, I had a phone call from a gentleman named Scott Johnson. And when Scott called me up, he introduced himself. I like to talk to people. He, unlike Marco Mukabir, just had a conversation with me. Marco Mukabir, Mook, M-O-U-K-H-A-I-B-E-R, for those people, he goes by the name of Always Marco. Scott called me up, had a nice conversation. Marco called me up, was deceptive, lying, blah, blah, blah. The gotcha kind of a radio show, gotcha kind of a phone call. So anyway, Scott Johnson had a nice call with me, and we talked about this stuff that's going on with MLM. And he said, you know, Peter, there's something a lot of people don't pay any attention to, and that's the MLM tool scam. And I had hired and fired myself 3 times with Amway. When I say hired and fired myself, I know I'm using the wrong verbs, but I was the one who made the decision. And when I finally left after the 3rd time, I came to the really grand conclusion. After the first 2 times, it was probably just they were making more money on books, tapes, and functions, tools, let's call it. So when Scott said something about the tool scam, I anticipated that he was probably talking about the same thing that I was thinking. But I did ask him, Scott, do you have a website? And he said, sure do. And this is where you might want to write it down. It's called Stop the Amway toolscam.wordpress.com. So that's when I knew that he was still talking about the same thing that I was talking about. So we talked about, you know, people making more money on the business than in the business based on those tools. So we decided to do a couple of radio shows. What I did not realize is how much Scott Johnson really was studying MLM. So we would pick apart different things and talk about different topics, and it became something where we do this every Saturday, unless there's some kind of a, you know, event that might happen that we might not, which is less often than usual. So when we do our radio shows, we talk about all different and various things. We'll talk about traditional stuff relative to MLM, what makes an MLM a pyramid, what makes an MLM a Ponzi. And some of our anti-MLM people probably want to listen in because you still friggin' haven't figured it out yet. Even though this book's called Ponzi-nomics, written by Robert Fitzpatrick, who's a nice gentleman, but he's still stuck on the whole thing. If you listen to some of the things that we talk, we'll talk to you about what a real Ponzi scheme is, what a real pyramid scheme is in layman's terms, so you'll be able to understand it and not make yourself look foolish like Marco Mukabir on his recent video. But anyway, so having said that, we like to talk about things like that sort of stuff. We talk about the importance of retail sales. We talk about things like, you know, what might be going on with cryptocurrency. Then we talk about the cult-like nature sometimes that happens with anything, especially where there's a following. We've spoken about, believe it or not, some of the things related to organized crime associated with network marketing, banking, cryptocurrency. We've even touched on, and this is crazy, child sex trafficking, because some of the business models behind child sex trafficking are running parallel to some of the things that happen in network marketing. So we've discussed companies like Nexium, which like Keith Raniere and the sex slaves. We've spoken about Herbalife ad nauseum, companies like Vima when they were going through the stuff, Success by Health, and a lot of other companies as well, Zeke Rewards. Some of the stuff is personal because I was actively involved, either as a person that knew a lot of inside scoop on some of these things. But we always give you plenty of information to be able to have access to the knowledge that you might need to have a better handle of what goes on in the network marketing industry. Well, today I'm going to introduce Scott in a second, but Scott Johnson, again, has that great website, stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com. But we're going to do something a little bit different. Many times say, you know, words are nice, but take action. Like, you know, knowledge is nice, but it's what you apply and what you do with it really matters. Scott wants to leave a voice recording that will be able to chop out of this radio show and send to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. So we're going to be doing a little bit different stuff. So part of it is just, you know, this is the best time for us to be able to record it. Then I'll send it to my techie guy. He'll be able to chop it up. So Scott will be able to include it in what's going on with the FTC. And although I'm a huge FTC fan when done right, just like everything else, but sometimes the FTC does things that I wish they would do better. Sometimes it would be nice if they talked to some of us that probably they should, so they can get an inside scoop stuff. But who knows, whatever reason they do, whatever they do. We're going to get Scott Johnson on this in just a second. So I am going to turn on Scott's microphone. Scott Johnson, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Hey, Peter, thanks for having me on my own show. I really appreciate it, and thanks for the extended introduction. I was just finishing my dinner, and I appreciate you drawing it out a little bit. So, yeah, what I'd like to do is, in a minute, read my input to the FTC, and much like, you know, Rush Limbaugh used to do, he used to say on his radio show, "I am your show prep." You know, he was talking to all the other news outlets, and since he was on in the early part of the afternoon, what he was saying basically was, I have all the stories. All you have to do is copy me, and you'll have all the important stories to cover later on in the day. So it was just his humorous way of putting that across is, you know, his show was the other's prep. And so that's kind of how I look at this too, is I'm going to be reading hopefully within 2 minutes. I think I can do this in 2 minutes because that's the limit. And by the way, this really is your show prep. If you're listening to this and want to give input to the FTC, I gave written input before the last meeting last month, and apparently they're going to do this once a month now. They had been doing 1 minute recordings, or you can show up live if you want and do a, you know, 1 minute either audio or video presentation. But 1 minute really is not very much time. Even 2 minutes is not very much time. I put together a one page spiel here that I was hoping I could do in 2 minutes, but it's really more of a 5 minute thing. And so what I'll do is the two-minute part, and then after that I'll do the full 5 minutes because I took out a lot of what I consider very important detail. If you don't know the detail, then the sort of generic two-minute message gets lost in the weeds a little bit. So, and I really appreciate you doing this for me, Peter. This is great to be able to make this recording and take care of things. So my usual introduction is kind of included in this, so I won't talk about too much the lack of retail or the tool scam like we usually do, because it's kind of covered here on this page that I have that I'll try to read quickly enough to make it in 2 minutes.
Before you get started, so what you do is just tell us when to, because we're doing this live, and the reason why we're doing this live is because we have to get it to the FTC by Monday. So we only have a couple of, you know, we only have a little bit of time to be able to do this, and it's the weekend, it is Saturday night and all that sort of stuff, so we want to make sure we get it right. So you just work as if we're just listening in and just say, start now and end now, and if you need to do a retake, we'll do it live on the radio show. So I'm going to mute myself out. Rest is yours.
Okay, sounds great, Peter. I appreciate that. So I'm going to try to get this done. Listen, Peter, if you have any kind of a stopwatch on your phone or something like that, if you can tell me at the end whether we made it within the 2 minutes, because they're pretty tight on that 2 minute requirement, or 1 minute requirement. I don't know if they're going to have any flexibility with the 2 minutes, and I'll have to read this pretty quickly to get through in 2 minutes, but I'll give it a shot.
Hold on a second, I got to get my stopwatch as a timer. When timer ends, how the hell do you do this stuff? Oh, stopwatch. There we go. Let me just start one.
All right. I'll just give you a quick countdown here. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. I was scammed by Amway and my upline from 1993 until I found out about the tool scam in 2005 and have researched Amway and other MLMs to this day. You can find much more information at the links on my Facebook page, facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson. As have tens of millions of others, I lost time, money, and relationships. I also lost promotion opportunities in my career. There are two major problems with MLMs the FTC should have addressed decades ago. They operate as illegal pyramids and RICO frauds. Both of these business model major material facts are not widely known to their downline or prospects/general public. Most anti-MLM critics don't have a clue what they are talking about, as most of them have never been in an MLM and are not interested in learning about the real issues, preferring to focus on legally and logically debunked issues such as saturation. The FTC has claimed the MLM illegal activities are far too complicated to address industry-wide, as it typically takes 2 to 3 years to adequately analyze a single MLM to find and resolve illegal behavior. which is not only wrong, but places the burden on the average citizen who probably has never heard of MLM prior to being approached by one and is expected to make a life-changing decision within 2 or 3 days, if not hours or minutes. As Commissioner Chopra has stated several times, the FTC's lack of addressing these issues on an industry-wide basis is a major failure of the FTC. As Commissioner Phillips stated a full year ago, with zero public updates since, the gross profit and the income disclosure statements are inadequate, as overhead costs must also be considered to determine net profit. The net profit issue is the flip side of the tool scam profit coin, and both sides should be considered. You are our public servants. You have my email and phone number, contact me. As Tom Brady, the multi-year Super Bowl quarterback, exhorts his teammates, do your job. That's the end. Ooh, I think that's just under 2 minutes, Peter.
Yeah, you nailed it. You nailed it like right on 2 minutes. So we're
wow,
good to go.
That's
now,
amazing.
Now, do you want to try to do it again and we'll take the best of the two? Or are you okay with what you did?
Let's go with what I did. I probably can't improve too much on that.
That's
what
fine.
I would like
now
to do is
now you're going
to
do,
you know,
your regular
kind of,
one.
Yeah, let me just do the whole thing, and I'll take my time a little bit. I won't go quite as quickly, but I also took out a bunch of what I consider important detail, because if you're not familiar with what the tool scam is or the lack of retail sales, you know, some of that might, you know, especially if you're new to the show and not real familiar with MLM or this radio show that we talk about all the time, these issues, it'll make a little more sense, hopefully. So let me just go ahead and sort of reread this, but insert the parts that I left out in
and
order
could,
to make the 2 minutes.
Could you set it up a little bit more? Because there might be some other people that might want to do this two-minute recording themselves. So kind of set up the reason and where and how this stuff works and why
yes.
we're doing what we're
yes.
doing.
Yeah, if you go to FTC.gov, and I think there's a link on there that talks about schedule, and if you click on that, you'll see, you know, October, and just look for the open FTC meeting. You click on that and just keep drilling down, and what you'll see is a page where you can either submit a written input, and if it's short enough to meet the number of characters, I'm not sure what the character count is, but you know, if you try to fill that in, it'll stop at the point that the maximum has been reached, or you can also submit a written document that's longer and just email it. There's an email in there on the FTC website where you send your longer written input, or you can do this 2 minute, you know, either audio or video input. Now, in the past few months, it's been a 1 minute, but this month, for the first time, it's 2 minutes, you know, which is really not even enough time to develop many ideas, as you just heard, but 1 minute is even worse. I mean, I didn't even consider the 1 minute thing because it's just not enough time. It really should be like 5 minutes. That would be a better time frame to really develop things. But anyway, you can also sign up to do a live audio or video presentation, but you have to be available this next Thursday. I think it's at either 12 or 1 o'clock p.m., and it's towards the end of the FTC meeting. So what they do is they do their normal it's been kind of a dog and pony show, really, these past few months, because there's five FTC commissioners, and because there's a Democrat president, then three of the five are Democrat commissioners and two of the five are Republicans. Well, they've had this ongoing, I'll call it a feud, between the Republican and Democrat commissioners, which is kind of unique because in the past they've generally gotten along better, and it hasn't been just split down party lines. But it has been since, I guess, July, when the new FTC chairperson took over, and she's basically been running the meeting with an agenda of topics, and the Republicans have been complaining that, hey, you didn't give us enough time to prepare for this. You gave the minimum 1 week public warning of this meeting, and we haven't had enough time to talk together or to our staffs, and they've really been down on this approach. I kind of like it, even though I'm a conservative Republican, because what I see in the Republican commissioners, and quite frankly, Republicans in general, is they like to talk about stuff. They don't really like doing stuff. And, you know, this is way past time when stuff should have been done. And I'm talking like decades, not just a few minutes. So anyway, I like the way that she has been running things and keeps things moving. I don't always agree with the vote of the Democrat commissioners and some of the things that they're doing, because they're kind of rushing through things and not thinking things through, and that could, you know, bite them later on. But I do like the sort of the emphasis on action, and that's what we need, is we need that sort of, you know, just let's get stuff done, you know, because we can talk about it forever, and that's what, quite frankly, the Republican commissioners would rather do, I believe, is just keep talking. They recently approved a new ruling, or I guess it's really the same old ruling, essentially, on the clothing labeling rules. They were considering, or I guess it was a proposal, to remove the clothing care, fabric care. And obviously that's the wrong answer, because we all know once you create a bureaucracy, you can't just delete it. I mean, there would be lawyers crawling all over each other with all the damaged fabrics from dry cleaners and even self-care. And so it didn't make any sense to do that. And they could have decided that within minutes, but it took them literally a decade. And then one of the FTC Republican commissioners was just slapping the lawyers that work for them on their backs, like, you guys did a great job. This is wonderful. Well, they didn't make any changes. And they even said, and this is the FTC commissioners again, that they didn't even review any new fabrics, you know, in order to consider new requirements for care of those new fabrics. So it was basically no change, but it took them a decade to say no change. Now, my opinion is the FTC should not be pushing what the content of the fabric care labels are. That should be up to the industry. You know, the industry should have put those things forward. But they didn't, apparently, and the FTC either, you know, didn't receive it or didn't act on it, because basically it's a no-change, decade-long decision. So that's the kind of frustration I have. I mean, I submitted a comment back in 2006, literally a decade and a half ago, regarding Amway's tool scam, and that got basically no traction. I got a note in the Federal Register, you know, big whoop. It's really meaningless from the standpoint of, again, getting past the talk and doing something about it. So anyway, that's a little bit of background. Is that kind of what you were looking for, Peter?
That's perfect. So what we're doing now, for those people that might be just catching us, is Scott recorded a two-minute message that we're going to chop, put it up on Building Fortunes Radio under Scott Johnson, so it'll be like a two-minute clip, and then we're going to take that and send it to the FTC. And then, Scott, what we'll probably do, too, is we'll take this five-minute clip as well. So we might as well do both. We'll put this five-minute clip up there, so you'll be able to hear the two-minute clip for the FTC, the five-minute clip for those people that want to just kind of hear this, and then, of course, the full radio show is always going to be up on buildingfortunesradio.com/Scott-Johnson. So back to you, Scott.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Yeah, I mean, hopefully some of the FTC people will hear the two-minute clip, but they're going to be at the business, you know, was it Business Fortune Radio? What is the name again?
Building Fortunes Radio.
I got it backwards in my mind, yeah. So, I mean, hopefully they'll look at other links, and this five-minute thing will be one of those links that's right next to it, and they can listen to the, you know, unabridged version. Actually, the five-minute version is abridged too, but I was trying to think, I think I can say this all in 2 minutes, and I tried, and there's no way. So anyway, I'll slow down a little bit on this one because we're not being timed, but I'll read the same thing plus the stuff I took out. So did you have anything else before I start doing that?
We're good to go, and I'm going to mute myself out so there's no background noise on my side. Here we go.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks. So here's the 5-minute version, or 5 or 6 minutes. I was scammed by Amway and my upline from 1993 until I found out about the tool scam in 2005, and have researched Amway and other MLMs to this day. You can find much more information at the links on my Facebook page at facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson. And that's T-E-X, Scott Tex Johnson. As have tens of millions of others, I lost time, money, and relationships. I also lost promotion opportunities in my career. There are two major problems with MLMs, and the FTC should have addressed these decades ago. They operate as illegal pyramids and RICO frauds. First, they operate as illegal pyramids in the form of a hybrid 1980s airplane game. You can Google that. Just Google airplane game. With overpriced products, which are used to camouflage the illegal pyramid. Most distributors sell little to none of the products to outside customers. This is the literal definition of an illegal pyramid, and I haven't found a single MLM that has significant retail sales, defined as half or more of the sales being purchased by customers outside the network, as enforced by the half-decade-old and far too rare 2016 FTC settlements with Bima and Herbalife. And the FTC should require all MLMs to report their retail sales and make the information open to sampling audits by organizations such as the Direct Selling Self-Regulatory Council, which, as a footnote, that's an organization within the Better Business Bureau. It's a sort of a self-regulating organization. They find the worst of the worst and do turn them in, but they should turn all of them in. That's just a little extra editorial. They could also allow truthinadvertising.org and the FTC, as well as provide contact information for current distributors on a quarterly basis, which will soon provide access to former distributors as well, as much more honest information can be gleaned from them regarding what they were taught to do while in the MLM, such as the emphasis and results regarding retail sales to outside customers. Just cleared my throat. The state of Washington addressed the current/former distributor contact information issue with LuLaRoe recently, and their work should be used as a template for the FTC to address industry-wide. Second, many, like Amway, have tool scams in which the upline make most of their profits from the meetings, books, recordings, phone apps, websites, voicemail, etc., compared to their MLM illegal pyramid. This is probably RICO fraud. It is at least business fraud, as both of these business model major material facts are not widely known to their downline or to the prospect/general public. Most anti-MLM critics don't have a clue what they are talking about, as most of them have never been in an MLM and are not interested in learning about the real issues, preferring to focus on legally and logically debunked issues such as saturation. The FTC has claimed the MLM illegal activities are far too complicated to address industry-wide, as it typically takes them 2 to 3 years to adequately analyze a single MLM to find and resolve illegal behavior, which is not only wrong, but places the burden on the average citizen who probably has never heard of MLM prior to being approached by one and is expected to make a life-changing decision within 2 to 3 days, if not hours or minutes. As Commissioner Chopra has stated several times, the FTC's lack of addressing these issues on an industry-wide basis is a major failure of the FTC. As Commissioner Phillips stated a full year ago, with zero public updates since, the gross profit in the income disclosure statements are inadequate, as overhead costs must also be considered to determine net profit. The net profit issue is the flip side of the tool scam profit coin, and both sides should be considered. You are our public servants. You have my email and phone number. Contact me. as Tom Brady, the multi-year Super Bowl quarterback, exhorts his teammates, do your job. And that's the end, Peter. So any comments on that? And I guess we can then rip into our planned agenda here for the past week of MLM goings on in the industry. So go right ahead.
Great job. I know you took a lot of work and time and put it into it, and we're going to make sure that's up on buildingfortunesradio.com/Scott Johnson, and we'll call it something like FTC response or FTC reply or something along that line as well. And that's it. So great job, Scott. Good job. All right, so I'll let you start the rest, however you want to start the rest.
Okay, great. Yeah, and I appreciate this outlet to be able to put all that together for me. I really do. And by the way, I encourage everybody that's, you know, listening to this to give their own input, whether you agree with me or not. You know, provide input to the FTC, and because the more people that speak up about this, the better we're going to be influential with making this a priority on their plate. Now, they do have, and they have been having private meetings, but we have no idea, of course, what the topics are. They might be MLM. They might be, you know, one of the myriad of other things that the FTC is responsible for. They're responsible for a lot. It's basically any business. And so there's a lot out there. There's a lot on their plate. So, you know, basically the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and that's what we need to do is squeak as much as we can so that it is a priority for them, that they see that there are more people than just me interested in this and expecting some action. So,
excellent.
Yeah, I guess we can get in.
Yeah, so we might have some people that are listening in maybe for the first time, or you might be new to this industry, and MLM has a really bad rap, especially if you're an anti-MLM hater or blogger or YouTuber or whatever. But a lot of people really don't understand the virtues of MLM, so I'm going to kind of share it in one little story. I had a gentleman, a doctor friend, who was just really good at what he did, and he was in the Tampa, St. Pete area of Florida, and he came up and manufactured his own product for his own patients, and it was really great product. So it was in a liquid, nutritional. I'm going to make all the medical claims. So he didn't make any of these medical claims. I'm just going to tell you, it was a great multivitamin. It also helped with inflammatory issues, and inflammation is a big issue regarding a lot of issues, and it helped with stress. So it was just a great antioxidant. It was great for inflammation, and the stuff really worked well. And he was using it successfully in his practice. Well, he chose MLM as a business model to expand his reach. He said, look, Peter, you know, realistically speaking, I could try to get this into Walmart, but that's a really hard thing to do. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, very sophisticated. And by the time Walmart's done with you, they own your company and you made no money. So it's hard to get into retail stores. I could open up other retail stores as well, but think about the financial investment that I would have to go through. I could do it on television. You know, I could be an infomercial dude, you know, like Kevin Trudeau way back when, or like Billy Mays. Kevin Trudeau is in jail. Billy Mays is dead. I could be like Vince, you know, the Wham, or what is it, ShamWow guy, or I could be somebody else. That's really expensive as well. I might be able to try to put it into QVC or stuff like that. So going down and going down and going down all the different options, he said, you know, the best option that I have, the most cost-effective way for me to be able to get the product out in a lot of people's hands is through the MLM distribution channel. He said, MLM is very well known. There's a lot of people looking for a great company. I don't have the same financial outlays as I would if I had to go through some of those other methods. So MLM was really a great way for a doctor to put a really great product in front of other people. And if you think it through, he had a lot of exposure. And as far as he had to develop a compensation plan, none of this stuff is free. He had to develop customer service. He had to develop the, you know, the labels and the infrastructure and the compliance and the taxes and everything else with shipping and blah, blah, blah. He had a lot of work to do. So it wasn't like it was easy and any jamoke could do it. But also he said, you know, he was less at risk. So if people bought the product and they resold it, he wasn't at risk. They were at risk. They bought the product. They could resell it, gain the retail pricing, but he could have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of people. And whether they took 1 minute to make a sale or 10 days to make a sale, he didn't care. He paid the same commission. So whether it took, he was paying based on the transaction. So if you really start to think about it, if you take your head out of your MLM behind because of your bias or your whatever you might want to think of, MLM is really an ingenious, very cost-effective, maybe even the best way to be able to introduce a product to the marketplace. So when done right, it could be done really right. And by the way, he did really well at what he did. Unfortunately, he attracted some MLMers, and the MLMers, through greed, wound up destroying his business, which was really a shame. But I watched it because I was there from the very beginning. We went through the whole entire thing. We did some of his customer service. We helped him with his compensation plan when he got screwed by a network marketing compensation plan company. I mean, I was on the front line. We bailed him out doing the stuff that he did, and everything that he was doing would be super-duper honorable. Pricing was great. He lost his shirt because of greedy MLMers, and I'm not going to identify which ones they are, but the reality was is when done right, it could have been done really well, and it was a win-win situation for a lot of people. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, I guess just a question on that, Peter. When you say the MLMers screwed it up, did they just not emphasize retail and just try to sponsor new people and get them to consume it, or what were the issues there?
I'll tell you specifically without identifying the people. They were the upper management were young guys, not young or acting like young guys, and they wanted to go to foreign countries and basically, I'm trying to parse my words easily. They were young guys that liked to mess around with women. So they were going to all kinds of other countries and basically saying we need money to be able to expand the business in Colombia because there's really pretty girls in Colombia, and Costa Rica because there's really pretty girls in Costa Rica. And they wound up basically whoring their way and taking profits away and not building the business. So it was 100% completely mismanaged by several guys that were just on a doctor's payroll, and they destroyed his business. And then they wound up stealing it from him because he was, like many doctors, nice and naive and didn't realize it. So they stole his downline. They took all his money. They sang a song and dance, and they destroyed his company. Having nothing to do with anything related to MLM or retail sales, having everything to do with just hiring the wrong guys.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, that's amazing. In fact, I had an upline who was a doctor, I think he still is, who told me basically the same thing. He said that, you know, doctors are easy marks for, you know, trying to use their doctor money to invest in other things and getting scammed. And you know, and of course, he was my upline. And he used to be in I can't remember the other MLM he used to be in, but it was another nutrition type, you know, vitamin type MLM. But he told me that, you know, when he was in that one, it wasn't very good, but Amway was great, which, you know, in hindsight was kind of, you know, coming full circle, because I'm sure he didn't make any money or probably lost money when you start thinking about he only made it to platinum, and he probably was not maintaining the platinum level, but he was traveling all over the place trying to, you know, get his business bigger, and probably lost money, you know, net as far as profit. So, it was, you know, just another part of the big lie.
My doctor friend got screwed by a vendor. So he had a vendor that did his compensation plan that basically kept him, he basically had him blackmailed and ransomed because they every time he had to do something, they charged him a stupid amount of money, and then they charged him X amount of money per person that he had on the payroll. It was just a bad deal. So it was just bad from the software. So MLM software companies suck sometimes. And then these guys, they talked a big game, and then they told them we were going to expand internationally, and they basically just went out and fooled around with a lot of women. And unfortunately, then they fooled around with a lot of women. They got him in some hot water, and this is a good man. I'm talking about this one doctor gentleman, good man, hardworking gentleman, nice family man. We were on the inside because we were helping him fix his compensation plan. We were helping him fix the infrastructure. We were helping him do customer service. And in essence, we were watching the other guys screw him as they were stealing the distributors, running away with the profits, had access to the bank account, basically were just being stupid. I mean, they were just being stupid. And unfortunately, they ran away with this guy's money, and the company went down. And in essence, though, but remember the beginning part of the story, the doctor's story made 100% sense on why he chose network marketing as a business model. So if you really think it through, network marketing could be, when done right, one of the best ways to introduce a product to the marketplace. It's the most cost-effective sometimes, the least complicated. You have the most leverage. There's a lot of really good reasons when done right. Unfortunately, maybe like Roger Van Vlissingen said, he said, in theory, it might be able to be done right, but it just can't be done in reality. In this instance, the reality was these couple of guys found a nice, naive sucker as a doctor, and they took him for everything he had.
Yeah, that's amazing. That really is amazing. You know, he could probably write a book. I mean, literally write a book on how not to start an MLM and give people a lot of tips, you know, so they don't have to relearn what he learned the hard way. That would probably be a very valuable thing that he could contribute at this point. And maybe you could even write the book if you were, you know, involved from the inside, you know, at least to a certain extent. But that's really an unfortunate story. I agree that, you know, I guess it's just hard to, you know, find people that understand MLM and want to do it the right way. That's kind of where we're at, to me, is what it seems like. And I'm actually from, as you know, the Tampa, actually the St. Petersburg area. That's where I was born and raised for 18 years. So I don't know if I knew this guy. I don't know how old he is, but it would be interesting. Maybe we can talk offline. I'm just curious,
Absolutely. You
know, what his name is and you know, a little bit about him. It's just fascinating to me, you know, that he's there where I was born and raised. So. Okay, well, good. Anything more? That's a really good point you made. Go ahead.
The guys that conned him, I'll share that with you when we talk, but the guys that conned him are serial con men, like serial con men. And one of them, I won't talk too much because I don't want to reveal too much, but one of them is an absolute serial con man and knows how to do it perfectly and just goes from one to another to another to another to another to another. And should be somebody who should know better, a con man is sometimes they have these endearing qualities where they have very big charisma and sometimes a very interesting story, but they just bad to do business with. So anyway, so we'll move on to some of the other things because there's some of those people and some of the stories we're going to highlight today as you go through the stuff that you have. But, you know, I just love to throw Marco Mukabear, who's always Marco under the bus, because he thinks if he reads a book, he's actually doing research. So, you know, Marco, you know, get involved in the industry, learn some things about the industry. You're going to make an excuse that you don't need to be because you could read stuff or you come across whatever you come across. But you really reveal how foolish you are because you say a lot of stuff that just doesn't make any sense. Or you say some stuff that's fundamentally wrong, or you say some stuff of people that think they're smart and academic and you're neither. So having said that, we'll jump into whatever else you want to mention.
Yeah, like you mentioned earlier in the show, I think Peter, you know, he's reading Ponzinomics by Robert Fitzpatrick right now, and he's been talking to Robert Fitzpatrick about his lawsuit. He's being he's being sued by a company, you know, by an MLM company. He lives in Canada, And he thinks that, you know, Robert Fitzpatrick is the expert in the industry, not realizing that even though he has given testimony or at least input, I think it was 20 or 30 different, you know, court cases, that he's never won, to my knowledge. I mean, he doesn't talk about winning, so I have to assume everything I've looked at that he's been involved in is typical, and he just has never won. But he likes to brag about how he's been a witness in all these different court cases. So, you know, and he gets a lot of things wrong, like I mentioned in my 5-minute spiel. You know, he's a super large proponent of the saturation theory, you know, where a person sponsors five and all those five sponsor five and all those five, et cetera, et cetera. It just doesn't grow that way. If you find a person that can sponsor five people, it's like one in a million people that can do that. Hardly anyone can do that. And then to expect all five of those people to be able to also sponsor five people is just astronomical odds. You know, it's approaching zero. MLM just doesn't grow that way. It grows slowly. It expands for a while. It contracts. It goes back and forth. But if you've never been in one, you don't have a clue. You think that this magic math is the answer, and it's not, because it doesn't reflect reality. The math is correct, but it doesn't reflect reality. So it's just funny how, you know, these guys get the notoriety and they don't have a clue what they're talking about. Go ahead.
Yep. And a little bit of disclosure. We did a radio show with Robert Fitzpatrick on Building Fortress Radio. So if you look for Robert Fitzpatrick, you'll be able to hear him there. I met Robert Fitzpatrick physically, personally, at the Zeke Rewards trial for Paul Burks. So I sat next to him. He didn't know it was me. I knew it was him. But I sat next to him, which was, I think, a little bit shocking. And he had just missed my my test, whatever I did. I testified on behalf of Paul Burks. So he just missed me. He was there because it's in North Carolina. He was visiting the case. But I know he missed mine because I saw him walk in after I was done. But I think he's a nice man. I think he probably means well. His arguments, you know, who am I to say, could be much better, because some of the things are worth criticizing about MLM. But some of the things that they say, the way they say them, really do deflate their argument. So, you know, if we had open and honest conversations, like, for instance, the one that I did on our radio show, Robert Fitzpatrick, if I can paraphrase and remember correctly, Robert Fitzpatrick said, I don't know anybody that makes any money where they can make a full-time income selling products retail. And I said, well, that may be a true statement for you. You don't know anybody, but I know a lot of them that do, meaning like I do. I run radio shows for them. I know a lot of people that make money selling product retail. So the idea that you are an expert and you say that you don't know anybody, I don't get it. How much of an expert can you be? Because they're there, and it's not like they're not there. They're there. So just because there may not be a lot of them based on whatever you think, they're there. And anyway, so that's where I sometimes have a problem with the argument. It's weak, it's really biased, and it's easy to poke holes into. So anyway, so back to you, Scott.
Yeah, and I would add to that, Peter, that it's not even the goal in most MLMs to sell that much retail to make full-time income. The idea is you sell at least as much as you use personally, and then you sponsor others that are doing the same thing. So you don't have to be this super salesman, you know, Mr. Retail, but you can have some retail sales to show that there's free market demand, and then sponsor other people to do the same thing. And as long as everybody, and let's define everybody as 80%, because, you know, you're not going to get 100%, but let's say 80% of the people that you sponsor are also retailing as much as they're consuming for their own personal household, you've got a legitimate MLM. It's legal. You don't have to work your brains out doing retail, because we all know retail has a high turnover, just like sponsoring people does, and it's very time-consuming. And so, you know, when you lose a customer, it takes some effort to find another one, and you're constantly losing them, and they have to be replaced, just like distributors. But at least distributors, what they're doing is is they're multiplying your effort if they're doing their thing as far as being active. You know, if they're active, then you're duplicating your effort. You're multiplying your time, essentially. And that's one of the big advantages of MLM is you don't have to just grind it out for 18 hours a day. You can actually, you know, if you do it right, and I haven't seen anyone do it right from a company-wide standpoint. I'm sure there's individuals like you know, Peter, that, you know, have retail sales. It's whether the company-wide has retail sales that really matters. That's what matters to the FTC. That's what matters to me, quite frankly, because if there's just one person doing retailing and nobody else can do it or very few can do it, then, you have an illegal pyramid and you just don't have a legal operation overall. So, you know, that's – I think the whole goal of having retail only – now, if that's what you want to do, fine. You know, that's your decision personally. Each individual has that decision to make, whether they want to do retail only or do some retail and do some sponsoring. But generally, most people do not want to be just a salesman. You know, that's not a common, you know, type of person you're going to find out there. But they're out there. Like you say, you know them. So I'm not doubting that in any way. I'm just saying that probably doesn't appeal to most people. And that's just my opinion. I don't have any, you know, statistical data to prove or disprove anything as far as that goes. It's just opinion. You know, all of my research, all of my personal experience, I just don't think that's a very high percentage of people that want to do retail only. So any more comment on that? I'll get on to our new stories here.
Nope, you're good to go. Let's go over some new stories.
Okay, great. Well, I think we left everyone with a cliffhanger last week.
Oh, that's right.
And I read the headline, so I'll repeat that, and then we can talk about this story a little bit more in detail. So it's from October 2nd, 2021, and the headline is J. Nolan fails to overturn Success by Health preliminary injunction. So, and again, it's been a week since I read this, but my takeaway from this article was that the FTC, you know, wrote a series of complaints, and Success by Health, or you know, Jay's attorneys, didn't even respond to some of the points. And so, when that happens, when the judge reads it, the judge reads the FTC complaint. He reads no pushback on the other side. It's almost an automatic decision that he says, well, the FTC must be right. So it's very unfortunate, and maybe it was impossible for the attorneys, for J. Nolan, to put together a counter argument, and that was the reason for the silence. I mean, they're lawyers, so they know this stuff. It's not that, we just missed it, right? It's their bread and butter. So they should know if they don't respond to certain complaints that the judge is going to say, well, it's 100-0. It's kind of an easy decision for me to make. And that's kind of what happened here, you know, in my reading of this story. And then also a lot of the lawyers are falling away. Again, I think the reason given in the story, and I think it's probably true, is that he's running out of money. And so he can't have this team of lawyers anymore. He's got to pare it down to maybe one or two. And I don't know who is left. You know, if it's the same guy that we saw on a video a while back who said, yeah, I'm going to win this thing and we've got a rock solid case. And, you know, lawyers always say that. So you can't really, you know, take that for what it's, you know, the statement as it is. You have to say, well, yeah, you guys say that every time, and we know that one side loses usually, right? I mean, sometimes there's a settlement, or sometimes, you know, the judge says, I really, you know, I find for the defendant on some things and the prosecution on others, and you could call it a tie of some sort, but that's pretty rare. You know, usually one side wins, one side loses, and so when they both are super confident, that's just them, you know, sort of posturing, and it really doesn't have anything to do with whether, you know, they're going to win the case or not. It's just posturing. So anyway, that's you know, kind of my take on that story. I know you have been involved in this particular MLM from the outside with some people. I think you've even had a guest on your show for a while that's been a distributor for this company. But that's kind of where we sit right now. And it doesn't look good for Jay Nolan and the success by health, you know, from my perspective. The judge hasn't ruled yet, so it's just, you know, both sides have given their input, and the judge will give his ruling, I don't know, a few weeks, maybe a month or two in the future frame. And that's what this website, by the way, we're taking the story from, behindmlm.com, behindmlm.com. They do a really good job with finding and tracking these stories. They are really good at updating when things happen. So it's a really good website for information. You can also do searches for, you know, company names or people's names and find all the stories on this website that have been written about them. It's really good. I often disagree with their analysis, but they do a really good job of finding and keeping up with stories. And I'll hand it back to you.
Yeah, so this is an example only because of who we do radio shows with and a lot of me knowing the inside baseball on this specific company and this specific investigation. This is one of those where it might be, how do you say, this is where you lose faith in sometimes the legal system. So I'll use an example. Jay Nolan comes from a questionable background, meaning he was in a network marketing company before. The FTC went after him. They wound up saying that he wasn't an owner, but he was a leading distributor, and he kind of had a bullseye put on his back relative to network marketing a long time ago. So then he starts his own network marketing company. So he's already got a file, if you will, from the FTC. He has 27 complaints, 27 plus or minus complaints filed instantly through to the FTC back in, I guess, 2019, I'm guessing, which instantly reopens up that file. The FTC decides they're going to go after him based on these complaints. The FTC freezes his bank accounts, the bank accounts of two of his other executives, shuts down the business, hires a receiver, and then starts his whole entire process, guilty as charged. So he's guilty before he does anything. So then, of course, he doesn't think he's guilty. The distributors don't think they're guilty because they had retail sales and could prove that they had retail sales. So they start lawyering up and probably, I don't know the exact numbers, close to $1 million raised through the distributors for the defense of Jay Nolan to try to defend this case. But here's the backstory. And by the way, this is not just rumor. This has been kind of verified. Luke Curry was the distributor, who was the disgruntled distributor, was sleeping with Jay Nolan's secretary. Luke Curry is a married man with three kids. Jay Nolan tried to, you know, get this guy to stop and try to keep his marriage together. And Luke Curry didn't stop. And he got fired by Jay Nolan. So this is all real. It's not even a question. This is not hearsay. I think Jay Nolan won a suit against Luke Curry in the state of Las Vegas, not state of Las Vegas, the state of Nevada, but in Las Vegas. And all this is documented. And Luke Curry on his way out the door said, the last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get you shut down. So all of these 27 complaints came from Luke Curry's downline. So after being deposed, they were found that a lot of these distributors really were put up to it by this Luke Curry guy, and it was really a fraudulent case. Things should have been thrown out at that point, as a disgruntled employee was not. FTC still has a hard-on, if you will, for Jay Nolan going after it. 700 affidavits later, lots of court appearances later, judge says, oh, all these affidavits about retail sales from these distributors, not, you know, the FTC has so much other information. None of this stuff really matters. So, huh? Like, none of this stuff ever matters? So, if you will, this is kind of like one of those things. This is like, in my opinion, if you've ever seen the movie Porky's, which was in North Carolina, And you remember when the kids were up against a judge or whatever, they never had a chance. So whether the lawyer for Jane Oland and the crew knew that they had never had a chance, or he was hoping that maybe he might be able to do something, I'm still not sure. If there's a truth serum, I'm going 50-50 either way. He probably knew that he was just going to be able to have a client that was going to be able to raise money, and they're going to complain and say, oh, we never had enough money. But I don't know, $1 million is a lot of money. $1 million is a lot of money to be able to defend a court case. I'm not really sure. We're talking about like one defendant, two defendants, three defendants, four defendants, something like that. I'm really not sure how much it really cost to be able to defend this. So in this one, I'm looking at this as almost like, you know, if you're big enough and you're good boy situation enough and you are doing these types of things, whatever we read that's coming out from the courts is part of the story. But the reality is they wanted Jane Oland done. They had his money. They wanted to close him down. They're trying to prove an example. And this is just the overbearing FTC and a judge beating down on the distributor who probably had enough, and a distributor and a company owner, who probably had enough adjustments he was supposed to be making, but didn't deserve to go through what he's gone through and will probably continue going through, because once this default judgment or whatever judgment is finally done, he's going to owe a lot of people a lot of money and probably have a really hard time recovering and be under the microscope for a long time after that. So only because I know a lot of the inside baseball on this one, this is one of the ones where I say, you know what, FTC, I think you got this one wrong. There's been a lot of ones I think you got right, but this one I'd really like to see. You know, if we had a conversation, turn the recording off, and be able to have a real conversation about this one, I think this one would probably be do a replay or an undo, or maybe give this guy a chance or whatever. It didn't turn out the way it was supposed to. Now, by the way, they destroyed the livelihoods of other executives in the process of doing these things. Company was only like a year and a half old, 2.5 years old when this was done, and there were some executives that came over from other companies and doing other things. They have destroyed their finances and their lives and maybe even their health as a result of what's happened through here. So there's real victims. It's not a really good thing. And in my humble opinion, the FTC, if you're listening, you know, we should really have a conversation about how you handle this one. You know, mano a mano, man to man. Come on, let's have a real conversation, because I think you blew it on this one. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, I just want to say that'll never happen, because
it never happened.
His lawyers just posture. They're not ever going to have a one-on-one, honest conversation. It just doesn't happen. I've had too much experience in this area, you know, from other lawsuits. You know, when Amway sued me, when I was working in a nuclear plant and there was an industrial accident, there's no human as far as, you know, what's in a lawyer's mind. It's all win at all costs and never, you know, never sort of come clean and be honest. They're just not wired that way. Seeing that you'll never get down to the truth is the bottom line. And I do think also, because this was such a young and small company, it was really weird that the FTC went after them, even with that input from the former distributors. And I think a major part of the reason they did was they just wanted another bite out of Jane Oland, because they had gone after him before and they said, hey, we really, you know, didn't like this guy before and we still don't like him, and they smelled blood in the water, you know, and they just went at it and went after him. It really was surprising to me that they would go after such a small and young company when there's Amways out there that have been doing this stuff much worse than what he was doing for decades, multiple decades. And it just isn't right. You know, go after the big fish. Don't worry about the little minnows. The minnows are not the problem. The big fish are the problem. So anyway, that's my two cents on it. Peter, go ahead.
Yep. So here's some of the things that I've learned. The FTC goes after people that are unsophisticated. They got the money in one place and they know they're going to win. So that's the FTC. So they go after – so Jay Nolan, unsophisticated, he had mixed bank accounts and blah, 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 all over the place. Good salesman, good coach, good trainer, but not very organized as a businessman. All the money in one place, he was easy to just shut down. and it was an easy win. So that was just a slam dunk. What the FTC did not expect was how hard his distributors were going to fight back. I don't think there's a network marketing company that I know of. So just, you got to catch this. There's no other network marketing company that I know of that their distributors fought the FTC with their own money to the tune of $1 million. There's no other network marketing company that I know of. And Scott, relatively speaking, I'm talking about this, that network marketing company never did more than $7.5 million total. Total. So talk about the commitment from the distributors to keep this company going, how much they felt they were done wrong. So we're not talking about $7 million a week. We're talking about $7.5 million in volume in like a year and a half. I mean, that's nothing. That's not even a blip on the radar screen in the world of MLM. So proportionally speaking, I can tell you there's never been a network marketing company that fought the FTC as far as money raised in proportion to money that the company ever brought in. That I can tell you flat out. But the reality is that I don't even think there's ever been a network marketing company whose distributors have fought back against the FTC as hard and with as much information as this company, Success by Health. And by the way, I got to give hats off to the gal that we do our radio show. Her name is Jody Bear. So Jody Bear is the gal that we do the radio show. And she was the one she was the leading distributor as far as earnings. And we documented on my radio show how hard she and her distributors worked. So I know because I spoke to them, and I remember a lot of the things that we were doing as far as helping them and all the different things that they were doing. They were selling product retail. So leading distributor doing the leading thing, and she was the one who helped raise most of the money. And the bottom line was FTC has so many other places, so many other places to go after. But they chose Jane Olin. So they picked a fight with a little guy. They wound up being a big fight, and they really did a good job as far as the fight. The problem was, I said to Jody, when this whole thing first got started, I said, Jody, I hate to say it, but you know the only people that make any money at this are the lawyers. You know, the judge is going to sweep all this stuff under the carpet. The FTC is going to be able to get their way. They're going to suppress evidence. You're not going to get your way. By the time this is done, if this follows the track that other companies have followed, and there's nothing to tell me that yours shouldn't, this is going to be 2 or 3 years of your time, lots of your money, and by the time you're finished, you're going to lose. So you decide what you want to do. And, of course, everybody thinks that they're going to be the exception to the rule. And in this instance, they weren't and aren't. And now they're running out of money. So the possibilities of them being the exception are slim to none. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, didn't they start a counter lawsuit against the FTC that wasn't just
Absolutely.
Defending Jay Nolan, but they countersued the FTC. So, yeah, they were very, I guess, aggressive. And, you know, the FTC is like any other prosecutor. They won't go after somebody unless they're pretty sure they're going to win because their career depends on it. You know, if they have a case they lose, then their career suffers as a regulator and even as a lawyer. You know, if they leave the FTC and go into private practice somewhere, you don't want to have a losing record. So, you know, they pick fights that they know they can win, and certainly a small young company with a guy that, you know, has had issues in the past is a perfect setup for them to win. It, you know, it's just a great combination of factors that I'm sure they were just frothing at the mouth, the FTC that is, you know, to go after this guy and make him look like the worst human being on the planet. And that's their job. I mean, as prosecutors, you want to make the person look as bad as you can, and it's up to the defendant to defend themselves, you know, whether they try to make themselves look good or try to make the FTC look bad, you know, and going after them, whatever their strategy is. But that's how the court system works. It's called an antagonistic system. And it's brutal, but it's really the only way you can do it when you think about it. You know, if the setup was, okay, you guys have to be nice to each other. Well, what's going to happen is it's going to start to escalate where you're not totally nice, and then you're kind of neutral, and then you're kind of nasty, and, you know, then it gets out of control. So you may as well just start with nasty and let both sides go at it. And that's our system. You know, people that are surprised by that should not be. And to your point too, Peter, you know, we've been doing this show for over 6 years on a weekly basis. We've covered, I would guess, dozens of similar stories, you know, where companies have been sued by the FTC, and, you know, it's the same story. Like you said, 2 to 3 years, maybe 4 or 5 years it'll take, but it's almost always the same ending. And, you know, that's something for people to realize. You know, you might think you're the unicorn and different, but you probably aren't. So go right ahead.
Yep. Yeah, and then just some other stuff. I mean, again, thanks to Jody Bear, she's a real activist and she's a hard worker and she actually goes out there and does stuff. She basically set appointments and stormed the offices. This is in Kentucky. Rand Paul, and I think it's Mitch McConnell, he's in Kentucky as well. So both of those people, you know, congressional senators, I don't remember which position. Well, senators, Rand Paul. What's Mitch McConnell? I guess he's a part of the House of Representatives, I think.
No,
so,
they're both senators.
They're both senators. Okay. So
McConnell's the Republican leader, right? He's the minority leader now. He was the majority leader. He's very, very high level. And, of course, Rand Paul is very influential as well. So I can't think of another state that has more power as far as the two senators, particularly on the Republican side, than those two. Yeah.
So she stormed their offices, and then there was a House Bill 2668, I think, which was doing something, really putting the hammer down on home-based businesses and network marketing companies and stuff like that. And she was actually supposed to be on the floor with Nancy Pelosi hearing their arguments. And I'm going to get these days wrong, but just let me kind of say these days for example purposes. They were supposed to be on the floor on a Tuesday with their lawyers fighting this House Bill 2668, and Nancy Pelosi called off the meeting and forced the House bill through anyway a day before. So, I mean, Jody Bear, hats off to her. She was pushing, and she's pushing, and she's doing all the stuff that, like, for instance, you're doing with the FTC and the recording. She did it by flying out, bringing representatives, signs in front of their offices, making appointments, being blown off, blah, 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 setting up an appointment to be actually at the House of Representatives, testifying like those congressional hearings, and to have all these things pushed through and just, you know, moved around without ever having a chance to be able to get some of their stuff done. So, you know, there's some – and by the way, and scammers don't do this, just so you know. Scammers don't work that hard preserving their own company. So she's a hard worker, she's doing the right thing. Hats off to her and all the other people from Success by Health from the distributor side. But when you read the Success by Health, maybe in behind MLM or some of the other stuff, you'll get that one-sided, you know, there are a whole bunch of scammers, losers point of view. And I'm going to say, you know, you got to dig in a little bit more. Put boots on the ground, you'll have a different story. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, scammers do what you were talking about earlier in the show with that doctor friend of yours. They just move on to the next, you know, opportunity for themselves, and they don't fight back. They just move on and find another victim. So exactly right. That's great discussion on that one. I'll move on to a new one here. It's October 1st, 2021 is the date on the story. And the headline is Utah Governor thanks doTERRA for COVID-19 protection ? And so I guess the governor of Utah, and by the way, Utah is like MLM Mecca, right? It's where more MLMs are based than anywhere else. A couple other states that are big with where MLMs are based is Texas, where I am. I think there's a few in Florida, but not a whole lot. Michigan, of course, with Amway. I think there's a couple others up there too. But, I mean, Utah is really where it's at. That's where I think by far more MLMs are based than any other state in the nation. So,
you know, let me just make a comment on that, Scott. I don't know what the name of the major highway is in Utah. So I'm just telling you straight up front. I don't know the name of the state. But I've driven – I mean the name of the highway – but I've driven on one of the major highways, And if you go, like, if you can find, like, Google Earth, or you can go, like, you know, how you could use, like, Google Maps and then, you know, drive down a highway or kind of, like, follow with a cursor. If you went down that highway, I'm telling you, they have MLM headquarters almost, like, on every street corner. Like, they probably have more MLM headquarters than they have gas stations on this highway. And that might be a slight exaggeration, but as you're driving down, you'll see this one over here, this one over there, this one over there, this one over there. So when you talk about Salt Lake City being the Mecca, it's Utah specifically, but Salt Lake City, you know, more specifically, drive down that highway and you'll see what you mean. Back to you.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's, yeah, there's a couple of suburbs that I can't think of them off the top of my head, but you see a lot of them from a couple of those suburbs, and also probably in Salt Lake City proper, where a lot of these MLMs are based. It just seems to be, you know, it's almost like, you know, the West Coast in California with all the high tech, you know, it's all, you know,
it's
kind
like
of
Silicon
a,
Valley, yeah, San Francisco.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Silicon Valley. And it's pretty remarkable. So I guess a couple things on this. First of all, our friend Dave sent us, and I don't have the link off the top of my head, but he sent us a link the other day about the annual DSA meeting, and I also looked into a little bit more. There's actually he told us there's not only the DSA meeting, but there's a pre-meeting right before the DSA meeting this year, and I think they're all virtual. I'm not sure if they're in person or virtual, but anyway, you know, it is kind of curious that the DSA has to meet before their real meeting, and there's been a lot of pressure on them, because if you look at the agenda, a lot of it is around the issues that the FTC is looking into. So I'm always an optimist. I mean, I don't believe anything until I see it now, because I've been burned so many times thinking that the FTC is really going to do it this time, but then they don't. But it does look like there's a lot of pressure, because they're bringing in lawyers from all over the place, you know, to give their input. But then I looked into it a little bit deeper. Apparently back in July, I think it was, there was a meeting similar to this one, but it was even a pre-meeting, I guess you could call it. And I haven't looked at it in real fine detail, but I did notice it's a lot of the same lawyers from a lot of the same companies, which, you know, should not be a surprise, because there's only so many people that specialize in this. But it's a lot of the same attorneys that are doing probably all three of these meetings, trying to get their act together, you know, as far as all these issues, particularly, you know, the two things that the FTC is really focused on right now, at least publicly, what they talk about are income claims and product claims. I don't think those should be the top two things, but it's a starting point. To me, the reason you have income claims and you have product claims is because the products are so overpriced, and if you don't make it attractive, and I'm not talking about customers, but just to the distributors, you know, you have to say income claims in order to get them interested to buy the overpriced products. You have to have incredible product claims in order to, again, just for the distributors, forget about customers, just for the distributors to buy these overpriced products. So it's almost a given that those two things have to be present. But I think, again, the real root of the problem is the overpriced products and the non-retail sales, you know, the lack of retail sales. That's really the root cause. These other things are more like symptoms. Maybe they're easier to regulate because you can find examples of them, particularly online. But, you know, if companies get smart like Amway does and do a lot less stuff online, then there's going to be a lot less evidence for the FTC to go after, and yet these companies are going to be doing the same behaviors. They're just going to be quiet about it, you know, be more secretive about it. And so that's why I don't agree with, you know, the FTC's points of emphasis, but they're going to do what they're going to do as far as I'm concerned. I'll keep telling them, hey, the real root cause here is lack of retail sales. That's what you really need to focus on. But they're onto this product claim and income claim kick, I guess. And another thing that ties Utah into this is one of the speakers at the DSA conference is Mike Lee. And now Mike Lee is known as a fairly conservative senator, but guess what state he's from?
Utah.
Yes, Utah. So there was a senator from Utah that retired a few years ago, not a lot of years ago, just maybe 4 or 6 years ago, and his name is Orrin Hatch. And Orrin was known to be very pro-MLM for obvious reasons. There's so many MLMs based in Utah that I'm sure he was getting a lot of campaign money and, you know, a lot of support from MLMers in Utah. So, you know, it was one of those things where politicians, you know, they go after the money. And so it doesn't really matter if these guys, you know, if he's a politician or she, it doesn't really matter. In many cases, they just follow the money, and the money's coming to them, so they support them. That's just the way it goes. And so I don't know what Mike Lee's going to say at this thing. I assume it's going to be at least semi-supportive of the MLMs. You know, I wish I could, you know, have a connection to his phone line and talk to him a little bit and fill him in on the facts. But that's just another interesting Utah tie-in, I guess, with this upcoming DSA meeting, which, by the way, a year ago, you know, that statement I read earlier, the longer one, Commissioner Phillips did give a pretty scathing speech last October, you know, October of 2020, where, you know, he was saying, you know, we're not looking just at the gross profit. We're starting to look at this, what's the overhead cost to make that gross profit, which is a good point, but it's only half the equation because the other half is, again, all of the profit being made on that overhead by the upline, and sometimes the company, but it's usually the upline. And that's the other part that they really need to look at, not just the overhead side, but the other side of the coin, so to speak, and look at the whole picture. That's really important because a lot of these MLMers, particularly in Amway, if they achieve diamond once, they did it probably legitimately, but then usually they don't hold it together, and so they drop back. And if there was no tool scam, you would see diamonds having to go back and get jobs, which would really just throw the whole thing into disarray, right? People would go, wait a second, you're a diamond and you're getting a job again? You said that jobs are just over broke and you've been dissing them and criticizing them, and now you got one again. So it would really shake things up. But anyway, I'll let you make any other I don't think the Utah governor was actually thanking this Duterra for COVID-19 prediction. I think it was just kind of a statement that you could interpret it that way, but I don't think that was his intent. Anyway, that's my opinion. And I'll let you make any other comments, Peter. Go right ahead.
I'm good to go on that one. So what's the next story?
Let's see. The next story, I haven't gotten too much further down than that one. I guess to your earlier point, Peter, there is a story here right after this one. It's October 1st, 2021, and I don't know how you pronounce his name, Vite, I guess, begging victims for legal defense fund money. And so this is, you know, another MLM that apparently is asking the distributors, that's the behind MLM.com's terms for distributors as victims, asking them for money to defend themselves legally, you know, much like Business for Home did. And it looked like that was kind of a grassroots thing. It wasn't, you know, the company begging the distributors for money. It was the distributors supporting the MLM. So anyway, that's just an illustration of what you were saying before, which is very true. You don't see distributors really standing up for the company usually. That is unusual. So any more comments on that?
Nope. We're good to go there.
So what would a show be without a OneCoin story? So here's October 1st, 2021. OneCoin making financial inroads into Romania, ? So I don't need to go too much into that, I don't think. I mean, I read it a week ago. I don't recall too much of it. But just the fact that OneCoin is still around, and particularly in Romania, which – now, I think Ruja was from Hungary, right? I think that's where she's from.
No, I don't think so. I think it was Bulgaria?
Maybe it was
either Bulgaria or Romania. But I think it was Bulgaria for some reason.
Yeah. It was one of those Eastern European countries are. I mean, they're all right next to each other, kind of. You know, they're all in the same neighborhood. You would think that a country near the country where she's from, and she's disappeared now for, what, 3 years, 4 years maybe, you'd think they would have a clue and inform their banks and so forth that, hey, this probably is not a good idea. So it's just crazy how, you know, we complain about the FTC and their lack of competence, I would say, but, you know, they look like experts compared to some of these other countries. So it's, you kind of throw your hands up and go, well, okay, here we go. You know, here's another country that apparently doesn't have a clue. And that's my conclusion. That's my opinion. So anyway, anything more on that one?
Nope.
Let me see if I can go back here. Because, you know, we missed like a month of these shows because we had.
Yeah, well, there was one newer one about Craig Grant.
We got to do that one. Yeah, we got to do that one. Let me go real quick. I don't think there was a whole lot of others here in the past that we need to pick up on. Let me go to that more recent one because that is a good one. As far as interesting stories for sure.
Would be if you were somebody that had been cookied in by YouTube for being a cryptocurrency probably observer, Craig Grant would show up on your YouTube a little bit like Ty Lopez used to. You remember Ty Lopez was the guy. He was like, you know, look at this Ferrari in my driveway and look at this Lamborghini and look at my beautiful house. All these really are nice, but they mean nothing to me. You know what really means something to me? My books. And he's really goofy, and Ty Lopez, you know, it's the con man that he is, you know, talking about his books. So back to that. Craig Grant was another one of those. You know, my lifestyle and my house and my family and my whatever, that means really, you know, it's really wonderful for me, and I didn't have to buy any of my Bitcoin. I earned it through my whatever endeavor. And he would be like showing himself on a boat or showing himself whatever. And it was all the time. It's like, God darn it. Craig Grant, get the hell out of here. I mean, he must have bought so much friggin' advertising. It was insane. And he was just Jamaican accent a little bit, kind of smooth. He's a black gentleman. That doesn't mean anything. But he was just kind of like going through the whole thing of how, you know, my yacht is really good and my lifestyle is really wonderful. But you know what? I didn't have to buy any Bitcoin to be able to do this. I earned this. I was talking about BitConnect. So Craig Grant was one of those people you just love to hate because he made such crappy YouTube videos that were all over the place. And Craig Grant brought us to Trayvon James, who's classic, like classic. As far as, like, stupid is as stupid does, he is, like, Trayvon James is the Marco Mukhaber of BitConnect. It's just like, oh, my God, you couldn't get better for stupid things said. And Trayvon, you know, Trayvon is hysterical. So Trayvon is, I don't remember, in North Carolina or South Carolina, stuck around because he doesn't think he did anything wrong. Like, he's like whoops. I'm sorry all you people lost money, but that's okay. I was interviewed by the FTC and maybe even the FBI or the CIA or whatever, and they haven't locked me up, so I must be okay. Craig Grant, on the other hand, said, I'm getting the hell out of here. And he fled to Jamaica, and he's been making YouTube videos in Jamaica. And the funniest thing in the world is, you know, he's doing everything from showing people he's got no money. So he actually owns a company that has blow-up stuff, like blow-up castles. You know, if you have a five-year-old kid and you need a blow-up castle, you're going to buy one from Craig Grant's company. So he's trying to show everybody how broke he is. And now, meanwhile, these guys pocketed millions of dollars through BitConnect. Whether they kept it all or were smart enough to be able to keep it all is another conversation. But millions of dollars that they probably converted over to Bitcoin as a result of that. But he was making videos in Jamaica. And people are saying, I'm saying to myself, this guy's stupid. I mean, this guy is stupid. The SEC, the CIA, Department of Justice, somebody's going to be going after this guy. And I think he still was making videos appearing as if he was in Jamaica, but based on whatever you're going to tell us, it might be a little bit different. So go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I saw this article right before the show, and so it's October 16th, 2021, if you're looking for it. And the headline is SEC tracks down BitConnect's Craig Grant in Jamaica. So apparently they have an address for this guy. They revised their papers, their summons, but it's not clear. Apparently they don't know whether he's been served or not. So they don't even know probably if he's still in Jamaica. But apparently he made a video the day after the summons was revised, but who knows where he is now. So it's kind of a short story, and there's more that's unknown than is known. But apparently the SEC is tracking him down. And in fact, there was a story here on BehindMLM.com a few weeks ago where they put a picture of a video of his on the website with some background, and somebody that was looking at it, one of the readers, was able to say, oh yeah, that's in this neighborhood, because I'm familiar with that area of the city or whatever. And they really nailed down to within probably a few yards of where he was, and perhaps where he lived. Now we don't know if he made the video near where he lived or not, but at least they put him in the neighborhood, and they're getting closer. So, but where is he now? We don't know. And so it's an interesting, what was the old story, where in the world is whoever, who, where in the world is Craig Grant? It's that kind of a thing. So anyway, I'll hand it back to you, Peter. I guess we're close to our hour and a half here, so I'll let you make more comments, and you can sign us off, and we'll get together next Saturday.
Nope, I think we're done. So we just finish up with Craig Grant. It's kind of crazy. And by the way, for all those people that want to know about Tai Lopez, it's hysterical. So I'm just tying this back into the typical con man. I was always, you'd see the Tai Lopez commercial. It doesn't do very much of him anymore. But he would be like, this is my Ferrari, and this is my big house, and I have a tennis court over here, and, we have a squash table over there, and this is my beautiful, pool, along with my 16-bedroom whatever mansion. But you know what? Nothing, replaces this book. It's like I read it. You go through a story, read a book a day. Well, I listened to Tai Lopez enough because I'm like, I know this guy's a scammer. His definition of reading a book is he reads a couple of pages or a couple of paragraphs, and then he says, "Up, the rest of the book is probably just about the same. So I've read this book." That's Tai Lopez. So it's crazy. It's just and people love this guy. So the con men are just out there like crazy. It's not just in MLM. It's in cryptocurrency. It's in self gurus or the self self-made gurus. It's all over the place, and unfortunately, if you don't know how to see it, you're probably going to get taken advantage of. So, Scott, thanks for being here. For those people
just a real quick comment. It goes back to that old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And I have to say that Tai Lopez reminds me a lot of my former Amway upline, in that, they would say, oh, it's not about the money anymore. We're doing just fine. And it's really more about us helping other people be successful. And you go, oh, that's so nice. And you keep thinking these are such nice people, but really it is all about the money. And it's about nothing else. They really don't care about anything else except making money, because their organizations are constantly falling apart and they have to work 24/7 just to hold it together, and so the whole thing is just a big fake show. I just had to kind of throw that in there, and I'll let you sign us off. Thanks.
Here we go. So we're going to call it a radio show. Thanks for people listening in. The first part, for those people coming in a little bit later, Scott did the FTC recording, so we're going to put this up on buildingfortuneradio.com/Scott-Johnson. So I have two versions. It might take a couple of days to do that part, but we're going to do all that sort of stuff. We'll have the 2-minute version, the 5-minute version, and then we'll have the full radio show up there as well. And Scott, thanks for all the great things that you do. Thanks for being here on this radio show, and we'll catch everybody next time on Building Fortunes Radio. Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.